Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today our guest is Sarah Ennie. Sarah is an author of a brand new YA book titled Tell Me Everything. She's also the host of the First Draft podcast, where she sits down and talks writing with all different sorts of storytellers, from authors to musicians and more. Before we dive in, I just wanted to remind you that there is a link in the show notes, and that link will take you to all the books discussed today, as well as our social media accounts for both Sarah and The Stacks. Plus, if you shop through the links on Amazon, you're helping to keep The Stacks free. If you're in the market for new book recommendations, make sure to email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com. Send us your name, what you're looking for in a book, and maybe a few titles you've liked or not liked so much. And my guest and I will give you a suggestion on the podcast in our Ask the Stacks segment. It's a great way to get exposed to books you might not have ever heard of before. So email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com. If you love this show and want to help us grow and take on new exciting projects, check out our Patreon page. You earn perks like our virtual book club and get to know that you're supporting a podcast you love. It's super easy, so check out the details at patreon.com/thestacks. Supporting our sponsors supports The Stacks, so make sure you check out Audible for all your audiobook needs. If you're new to Audible, you can get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download just for listening. So head to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Last thing, remember to subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast. Wherever you're listening to the show, click that subscribe button. It's super easy and it helps The Stacks grow our bookish community. And we all know book people are the best people. Okay, let's get to my conversation with Sarah Ennie. All right, everybody, we are here today with Sarah Ennie. Sarah is the author of a new YA novel. It's called Tell Me Everything, and she's the creator and the host of the First Draft podcast. So Sarah, welcome to The Stacks.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me here. I am so excited.
I'm really excited to have you. I'm a fellow podcaster, fellow book lover. This is like very synergy already.
When we're both in LA, I feel like this is a really fun community building exercise.
This is perfect. When you walked in the door, I was like, oh, I already love her. This is perfect. So let's start, I guess, I start kind of where you start, which is tell me a little bit about yourself. I know you start, where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I know my whole, and that's really just like a funny thing to make it easy for me. I'm like, great, I have the first question out of the way.
Yes.
So I am a young adult author. I've been writing for about 10 years, but my first book just came out. So it's been a whole thing. But I've been writing for a long time. I was a journalist. I moved around a bunch as a kid, but I've landed in LA. I don't see myself leaving here anytime soon. I'm writing the book I hope to be the follow-up to Tell Me Everything right now. But for the last 5 years, I've also been doing the podcast First Draft with Sarah Ennie, which has been super, super fun. You know, I'm sure you and I could talk forever about podcasting. Yes. It's really cool. It's just a medium that I got fascinated by and I'm really interested in. And I love talking to people about their creative lives. So that's where people can find me every week in between books.
What day of the week does your show come out?
It's Tuesday.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So Tuesday, First Draft. Wednesday, The Stacks.
Yeah.
Thursday, take a nap. Read a book. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to know kind of like, why YA? How did you start there? I know you were a journalist before, and I know that you like wrote crazy stuff like about like nuclear waste.
Yes, I did. Oh my gosh, I love talking about it too when it comes up. I was a journalist, and I was also an English major.
Okay,
so like many English majors, you know, I left school kind of like dizzy and having read just so much canon, you know, which I think we're progressing now, but then was like so many dead white guys.
Right.
So I moved to DC, started working as a journalist, and this is a whole story that we can get into, but basically, in 2008, my dad passed away suddenly, and it was a really intense, awful thing. And on the plane ride home from his memorial service, I had in my hand this like biography of Andrew Jackson, you know, the least soothing thing imaginable. Right. So I was at an airport at Hudson Books, and I picked up Twilight.
Oh my gosh.
Read it on the all in one go in a red eye flight, and was just, I hadn't been swept away by a book like that in so long, and it came at such an important time for me to just leave my own brain. So I picked up New Moon at the layover at JFK, and I just immediately dove into those books. And then from there, that opened the door to YA for me. And I was like, oh my God, that's right. I love reading, and like reading is so fun and enjoyable, and YA is plot driven and soapy and fun. You know, it's a lot, YA is a lot of different things, but that's what drew me back into it. It was a rediscovery of my love of reading.
Okay, so then let me ask you this. You became an English major before you rediscovered your love of reading, which I'm assuming was from your childhood.
Yes.
When you went to be an English major, did you know it was going to be so much dead white guy? And did you think, like, were you interested in that? Because I feel like in high school, people get kind of, like, pretentious and like, oh my God, I just love F. Scott Fitzgerald and, like, Jane Austen just turns me on, you know? But, like, really, you're like, I hate reading all these things too. So, like, did you know?
That's such a good question. And it's interesting to try to get back into my headspace because I am not going to lie to you. I was definitely pretentious. Like,
right.
I feel like, of course.
That's like being a senior in high school is like being the worst, truly.
Yes. Especially one who's like, I want to read the greats or whatever.
Right.
You know, but in high school, and we'll get into it, but my favorite book in high school was Their Eyes Were Watching God.
Okay. A dead white guy.
Not a dead white guy. And there was now I'm, you know, gonna forget, but there were a lot of books that really spoke to me that were different, but I didn't know. Like, looking back in college, my biggest regret is I didn't take comp lit instead of English, you know, and I didn't know what it meant. It's so obvious now looking back, but as a kid, I just thought English meant reading. And man, if I could go back and read more translated works, and, you know, I was studying French too, I would have loved to read something, gotten to the point where I could read something in French. But alas, I only was like, all I know how to do is read books and write about them. So I guess I'll do English. And when I got further along in college is when I realized, oh, I'm really good at the writing part, and I want to explore other ways I could do that as a living because I don't want to be a teacher. So that's how I found journalism. And to this day, I'm obsessed with nonfiction writing and essays and stuff like that. So I still really love that too. But I think you hit on the point of why I lapsed from loving reading was that it was, I didn't know enough to know that I didn't want to be assigned this stuff, and I didn't want to be reading this quote unquote canon. And now as an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, I wanted to read for history. I wanted to read for social reasons. You know, I wanted to learn more about the world by reading, and I wasn't getting that out of Shakespeare.
Right. Were there any works from the quote unquote canon that you do remember loving or that you would want to revisit or that you have revisited?
I have revisited The Great Gatsby because the first time I read it, I hated it.
Yeah.
It was so boring. I didn't like it. But when I reread it, I was able to recognize his unbelievable prose. Like, that did stand out to me. And like that final passage, you know, it's.
Yeah, I haven't read it since high school because I also hated it.
Yeah. To be honest, I would just pick it up in a bookstore and read the last page because that was like, whoa. It was like, oh, this man was a master of words.
Right.
But the book that I hated and have not revisited, nor will I ever, was Catcher in the Rye.
Ugh. I made the mistake of reading that book like right after college as like a 22-year-old. Like, I'm in New York City. Like, everybody reads this. And I was like, this is actually like toilet paper. Like, I hate this book so much. And I'm like big anti-Catcher in the Rye because I'm big on hating books. I think it's fun. Like,
me too.
I hate when people are like, I don't hate any book because someone put effort into it. I'm like, it's okay. Someone could put effort into it and you could still hate it.
Yeah. I have to be a little careful now because I'm in his job, but I agree with you because also, and I like hating movies too, because I think sometimes it's almost like you're still honoring it because you're thinking about it.
There's like a joy in really hating something because it means that it did something to you.
Totally.
The worst is like, I put a book down and I don't remember what it was called and who wrote it. That's like the ultimate insult from me.
I was looking through this. It's really funny. And I wasn't sure whether you would care about this at all, but I've been keeping a spreadsheet of books I've read since 2012.
Oh my gosh.
So that is what I brought here, a stapled spreadsheet of all the books I've read.
And I can't wait.
Looking through all of this, I was like, wow, there's a couple books where I was like, what was that book? And that is the biggest insult.
That's gross to me. Yeah. Like hating something is like kind of fun and like joyful in a way.
And you think about it. You're
right.
Like, why didn't I like it?
And
what
it elicited
was it doing?
Something from you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wait, you said you love nonfiction. I love nonfiction. So here's the question. Nonfiction YA. There's not a lot of it.
Not a ton.
Would you write it?
That's a really interesting question. You know, another YA writer, Mary H.K. Choi, whose new book, Permanent Record, is coming out this fall. It's really great. She wrote this awesome piece for Wired a couple years ago now, I think, about teens and technology, kind of how they interact with their cell phones and stuff. And like something like that would be interesting to me. But other than that, I don't approach nonfiction as thinking about it as YA. I could see myself like being drawn to something that then involved young people, possibly, but off the bat, no.
No. Okay. I was just curious. I've only ever read one YA nonfiction book. It was called The 57 Bus. And it's written by Dasha something, put it in the show notes. And it's about, this, gender non-binary kid in the Bay Area in Oakland, which is where I'm from. And they were attacked kind of as a prank on a bus by this other kid who went to a different school. He was a black kid. And he lit their skirt on fire. And it was kind of like a joke, kind of like, and not necessarily a hate crime, but also, yes, a hate crime. And it became this whole big thing of like, what's going on here? And the kid whose skirt was on fire, Sasha, ended up, like, it ends up being this whole thing. They end up being okay. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting book. It's about young people, but it's also written for young people. Mm. And it's really, it's, I would barely call it YA, but it is a little YA. But like the thing that's nice about it is it explains a lot. So like there's a whole section on like pronouns and like different gender identities and sexual identities and like sexual types of relationships and like what is bisexual versus pansexual versus like, and it's just, it was really interesting and the story is insane and amazing.
Yeah.
So all of those things, and it's the only YA nonfiction I've ever read. And I know like that Malala book, there's like a YA version of it.
Really?
But I don't know a lot of books that are like written as YA nonfiction.
That is, first of all, that book sounds amazing.
It's really good.
Really interesting. But that's such a good point that, you know, because even in my head, I'm thinking like, well, what makes something a nonfiction for YA or not? You know, and these are conversations that we have all the time about YA and what it is and isn't. But that's such a good point that I guess it would be more like teachable, quote unquote, teachable. You know, I really hate that word. But, and I guess that's why I don't think about it that way, because I've been reading nonfiction since I was a kid.
Right, me too.
And I am also, I mean, we're probably the same in so many ways, but in my head, I'm also like, I want to be seen as smart. So when books are in any way talking down to me, I have zero patience for it.
Right.
And that would be my fear of writing a nonfiction book for, quote unquote, for YA would be like, I don't want it to be like, this is to be taught in schools or something like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. No, I totally feel that. It's just, maybe that's why there isn't so much YA nonfiction also, because it's like you could just pick up the nonfiction nonfiction.
Right. Because I think nonfiction, and we can talk about these different genres, because in some ways YA fantasy, I feel this way, where it's like fantasy books for kids and for adults are pretty darn similar.
Right.
You know, there's some differences for sure, but with nonfiction, I just kind of feel like that's a age-free category. Pick it whenever, as soon as you're interested in nonfiction. You know, that being said, for 5 years old, you want something different.
Right, of course. But that's different. That's like, who is Michelle Obama? Or like, where is the North Pole? Like, those books are different.
I love those books.
Those books are amazing.
They are.
Okay, so then define for me what makes a book YA then to you. Because I have this same thing where I'm like, I felt like I was reading adult books when I was a teenager or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that I read some YA books, I guess. Like, I read Ender's Game.
Right.
But like, I don't, I never have considered myself a YA reader, except for like, I've read Hunger Games and I loved it. Mm-hmm. But like, there's not, but I read that as an adult. So like, I'm just curious, what do you think makes something YA versus not?
Well, it's a fluid thing, and it's a conversation that we in YA have a lot. And because it's so nebulous and kind of hard to pin down, to some extent, it's that Supreme Court nonsense of you know it when you read it.
Right.
Like
there's
some element of like tone, voice, you know, you have read Tell Me Everything, so you know that there is like my voice naturally is younger. Like it is a little bit, I don't know, you know, pop culture references. It's upbeat. It kind of skips along in a way that just feels younger. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of it. But there are other elements too about, to be honest, the theory that has come up recently in my brain that I'm kind of mulling over is like level of emotional connection to the subject. So a friend of mine was reading about young men during World War I, and she was reading like books written by young men serving in World War I, the poems they wrote in the trenches, all this stuff, which is like, you know, devastating and fascinating and beautiful. And she was like, well, this book that I'm writing about World War I could be YA. And I was like, I don't know. I don't And I, again, you can see, I'm like articulating it and working through this thing, but I was like, I don't know. I think for YA, it's like The Hunger Games is about Katniss. Mm-hmm. You know, you're so in her mm-hmm. mind and it's about her emotional space and about her falling in love or not falling in love, even while all of this is going on. And to some extent, adult books are a little bit more steps back and contextualized and like a person understanding the world and moving through the world with more experience.
Right.
A little bit.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm thinking, I went to LA Book Festival this year and I went into one of the YA panels mm-hmm. and they were talking about also how like there's like their editors often are like, take all this out. Mm. Like you're getting in the way of the story. Mm. And so I do think that that's also like part of YA, like more structurally, less theoretically, but more like what is the thing? It's less descriptive. It's less like inner monologue. There's a lot more conversation. Whereas like if you pick up a book for adults, I guess, I don't know, we don't call it just a book.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Yes.
But if you pick up that, it's like they could spend 8 hours on the library. Whereas I feel like in YA, it's like they get the library in a paragraph or two. Like you've got to like figure it out.
Yeah. This is what I think makes YA and screenwriting actually similar. A little bit more in step.
Yeah.
Is that, our editors are like, if it's in the book, it needs to be there for a reason. There's a lot of like interrogation about what you're trying to do, what's there. And I think in adult fiction, editors give a lot of leeway. And it's a lot of like, you're the artist, you're whatever. And YA is a lot more like, write a book a year and make sure it moves, you know? So it's interesting because I'm interested in writing screenplays too. And I feel like I'm well served by coming from that background.
Totally. Because you're creating a story with not as many words.
Yeah. Pare it down. Yeah. Make sure you can defend everything that's in there and that you really know. Basically, everything in a YA book has to do like 10 jobs at the same time.
Right.
And that's very true in screenwriting.
Right. Okay, let's talk about your book a little bit. I'm like so interested in talking about the ideas behind YA that I'm like, let me not forget to talk about Tell Me Everything. Why don't you give us like a 30-second kind of rundown of what the book is?
Absolutely. Yeah. Tell Me Everything is a book about a 15-year-old girl named Ivy. Ivy gets really obsessed. She's a photographer and a visual artist, but she's way too shy to share her work with almost anyone. She gets really obsessed with an app that kind of takes off at her school called Veil that allows people to share often visual but poems and stuff like that too anonymously. So she gets really, really obsessed with the kind of artwork that people are sharing and wants to meet these people and tell them about how much their work means to her, and she wants to do nice things for them. But it turns out when someone posts anonymously, they want to stay anonymous, so she crosses a lot of boundaries, and including with her best friend, who she may or may not be completely falling in love with.
So that's Harold.
Yeah, Harold. I love Harold.
I loved all the characters. There's like some really great, like the teacher, Miss H, and like I really liked Nate, the like handsome jock, totally my type.
Yay.
How do you name your characters?
Oh, that's a good question. A lot of characters in this book are just blatantly like my friends' names. Just
love it.
Throwing it all into a hat kind of and picking out words at random or names at random. But I'm actually not very precious about names. I will kind of like be in the moment writing something and then let a name just kind of fall out of the sky. And if it feels right, then I go for it.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
So in the book, you're dealing with like some age-old issues of like, you know, identity and like sexuality and putting yourself out there and that sort of stuff. But then you're also kind of dealing with like a very specific thing, which is like teenagers and social media and like what your online personality persona means to your real life. Why was it important for you to kind of go there? Because we're older than that.
We are older than that.
Like that's not really our life anymore.
No,
so
and
why?
Nor was it when we were kids, right? Like we didn't have to enter this minefield of Facebook when you're 13 or whatever, which is like, which really actually like tugs at my heart. Like as a full grown adult,
How do I do it?
So many issues. I have so many self-care needs surrounding social media and my use of it and my degree to which I allow it to intrude on my life and my time and my energy.
Right.
And I cannot imagine having been so young and dealing with all that at the same time. It's really challenging. So I do sort of, it's comes out of an effort to put myself in that position and to really consider what it would be like to be, especially a young artist who is so sensitive to the world and wants to share their work and their love with the world. But like getting knocked down about your work when you're 16, like, ooh, you know, that cuts you to your core. And for it to be done by strangers on the internet, like, holy cow. So I don't know. I'm fascinated with technology, but I'm really, I would say in my general life, I'm an optimist. When it comes to technology in Silicon Valley, I'm a fatalist.
Okay.
I am a total like, oh, we're all going to die. Robots are going to kill us all.
Sure.
No one in Silicon Valley knows what they're doing or is thinking about consequences. So I'm obsessed with consuming articles about that. I love the TV show Silicon Valley. I really like obsessively kind of look like I'm peering in from the outside and being like, you're all crazy and you're going to kill all of us. But so that's a lot of like, my anxiety is all over this book. But like, what does it mean? Are the, in this book, there, the villain of this book is a man named Rake Bermkazurg who created the app Veil. That's an anagram of Mark Zuckerberg, and he is sort of the outlet for all of my anxiety about the fact that people that are creating these systems may not be ready to take accountability for it, may not have considered how their creations could be used for ill.
Right.
I put all of that kind of into him.
It's so interesting that you say that he's the villain of the book, because I heard you say that on another interview, and I was like, oh, I guess he is. I don't really think of him as being the villain. I kind of just think of him as like existing. But I guess like that's the same as Mark Zuckerberg.
Right.
Like Mark Zuckerberg doesn't really factor into my thinking about social media necessarily unless like something happens and then he kind of like pops up.
Right.
So it's interesting that you said that.
And then he's sitting in front of Congress and you're like, that's the guy.
You're like, this guy.
A billion people. I just rewatched The Social Network recently and like, oh.
So I'm like right at that age where I went to NYU, so I was like the first group of people to have Facebook after like Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were like that first, there were like 10 colleges or whatever. And so Facebook has been in my life now for like, I think I just had my 15-year anniversary or something crazy, which for most people is like, you probably had Facebook like maybe like 10 years or like if you're younger, you know, like maybe you've had it for 8 years or something, but like, I feel like I've watched the whole Facebook thing. And as it shows you, like, these are your posts from 15 years ago. Like there were no status updates. There was no pictures. Mm-hmm. Like it's so different to see how these things grow and change. I was thinking to myself reading the book, I'm like, I wonder what Veil would be in 10 years. Like,
oh,
you know,
so interesting.
Like how it would work and like how people would interact with it and if they would. And like, cause the anonymous part of it, I feel like as I think about how social media is now, feels like no one would do it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because so much of social media is like, how can I get people to my SoundCloud page? And like, I want credit for this. And I want to parlay this into a job at BuzzFeed and like all of that. So I wonder if it would stay like for younger kids who weren't necessarily trying to build their brand yet.
Well, that's you completely, that's so fascinating. You really picked up on a lot of the kind of, I don't know what the word for it is, but when I was creating this app for this book, right, I guess you can kind of see in there that I was like, if I was going to create an app, what would it be? And it's anonymous. It's hyper-local. So on Veil, the app in this book, you can only see things that are posted from people within 5 miles of you at any given time.
Right.
So it was really me kind of creating a social media system that would try to undo or subvert what is exactly what you're saying. Most things are like, yeah, how can I become a name? I want to be known for this. I want, you know, all these followers or whatever. And Veil is also, you can't comment on anyone's thing. You can't like or dislike, or I guess there is a system of that.
But it erases after a week or at the end of the week.
That's right. That's the other important part about Veil. On Sunday night, the entire feed is eliminated and it starts all over again. And that was really purposeful. Because of the things you just said, like I was like, if this system created, I would want to be a part of it. And I would want to share goofy, weird things, you know, middle of the night thoughts or drawings or something. And I think a lot of other people would too, because it eliminates a lot of what we now have come to be annoyed by social media, right? It's like self-promotion and this sense of like skipping along the surface and only reading a headline and all that stuff. Like Veil is sort of the anti that.
Yeah.
But even that is still
right
has its challenges.
And it gets all mucked up and then there's conflict and resolution yes. and all that stuff. I do want to ask you about Harold. So mm. I did not pick up that Harold was black.
Okay.
But I heard you say that in an interview.
Yeah.
So I'm curious why it kind of wasn't really like explicitly talked about. Because these kids are like, they're going into their sophomore year. They're in their sophomore year. Harold's like super overachievery. He's like really already planning for college, which I'm like, Harold, my guy.
I know.
But I feel like I just am curious why like it was more not as overt.
Well, I to be honest, that feedback is really useful to me because he is black, and that was always really clear to me. That was always his character. That was always Harold, and his arc is that he goes to what quote unquote smarty pants camp,
right?
As a sophomore, and you know, just I think was kind of chugging right along, feeling great about himself, and then he went and saw all these basically national merit scholars, and was like, "Oh crap, right. I'm behind, and I don't even know right. it." Which I think is what happens to a lot of kids now, because everyone's comparing themselves nationally and not just within their high school. And he then gets all this anxiety about wanting to prove himself and get into a good school and all that stuff. And to me, I was thinking about it, and I'm a white woman for listeners, so I was trying to explore through him the phenomenon that happens with black families of having to do twice the work to get half as far
is, right.
is something I've heard many friends talk about and right. experience. So to me, that was his struggle. And that's what I was sort of trying to express through Harold's arc. And it is, I'm really bummed that I wasn't more explicit about it. So if I could go back and do it, I would make way more explicit references. I would be so much more clear. It also was not Harold's story.
Right.
So to some degree, I did make a reference to his skin color being dark, but it was obviously not clear enough.
Right.
But yeah. So anyway, if I could go back, I would do it better.
Interesting.
For sure. But that was always to me a huge central thing in his life. And right. also being a young black man in Silicon Valley or Silicon Valley adjacent.
Right.
There's not a lot of other.
There's not a lot of
black kids there.
Right.
So he was definitely in my mind. I imagined him dealing with that and thinking about it all the time. And it's part of why in the book, Harold also is on the vanguard of standing up for LGBTQ students.
Right. Well, that, yeah. I mean, I like hearing that he was black, I was like, oh, this makes sense. But for me, I was like, I do remember the dark skin thing. And I was like, I'm not sure. And then I also thought, well, like maybe in YA, there's like a move towards not expressly saying what anybody is. So I wasn't sure if that was like part of it too. Cause I know yeah. like, you know, a lot of YA things get turned into movies or whatever. And then it's like people freak out about the casting. If Harold's like got to be black and then they cast like a light skinned black guy, or like if Harold has dark skin and then they cast Harry Styles, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I wasn't sure if there was like a more like clear YA based reason, or I don't know. Just
yeah. No. And you're bringing up really, really interesting points, which that is true that, you know, I mean, God, if you're, I think YA is a little bit ahead of Hollywood. I hope
yeah,
the YA
I think
is
so.
Ahead. And so when things are turned into TV shows and movies, there's a lot of consternation from the reading community, as there should be, about making sure that the books are as diverse, the TV shows and the movies are as diverse as the books are.
Right.
Because now YA is a very diverse space and it's becoming increasingly so. So I definitely wasn't thinking about that. It really was a misunderstanding of how it was going to be read, to be honest. Also, my mom and a lot of other readers thought that Harold was Indian American.
That's what I thought too, possibly.
Yeah. And also that's, you know, Silicon Valley, that makes sense.
Right.
So no, I think I'm happy to talk about this because I
yeah.
really think that there's a lot of value in hearing authors be like, well, that's one of the things I would definitely change.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Most authors don't say that. So
well,
good on you for saying it.
You.
I appreciate it. I think that's super interesting. I want to talk about the podcast. Oh my God. I'm like, feel like there's like a million things I want to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Okay. So your podcast is called First Draft. You talk to storytellers, mostly authors, but
yeah.
some other people. You've had some other podcasters on. I was going through your catalog and you had DC Pearson on, and
yeah.
I know him from NYU. He was a senior when I was a freshman, but I don't know him, but I know him. His good friend who was in the comedy troupe with him dated my friend. So like he would never remember me, but I saw his name and I was like, I know him. And then I was like, I didn't know he wrote like books and all this stuff. I had no idea.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
That was really fun. So I really liked that episode.
Yeah.
But how did you kind of come to the show? Why storytellers? Like,
yeah.
Who, what, where, when, why?
Yeah, I love it. So the show started in 2014. So 2014 was like a real year.
Okay.
And it started with in like the springtime, I wrote a book that went really far in the like selling a book process.
Ooh.
It went to acquisitions, which is the step before you actually sign a contract for your book to be sold. So an editor wanted to buy it, but at the acquisitions meeting, the publisher said no. So it was a really emotional, disruptive, sad moment for me. And I'd been writing at that point for about 5 years. And then a month after that, my husband and I started to split up.
Oh.
So a lot happened at the same time. And we were in DC then. And I was like, okay, I don't want to be on the East Coast anymore. I've done my, you know, I was happy to be there for 6 years, but I was like, I really want to go back home. All my family's on the West Coast, but I don't know where I want to live exactly. And I also need to do some kind of like divorce thing. So, and at the time I was also not happy with my day job.
Okay.
And was like, ugh, you know, my dream job still forever will be being an NPR reporter. Like,
oh my
I just
gosh.
Want to be Nina Totenberg, you know? So basically I was like, you know, and I loved podcasts. I loved Marc Maron. I love Pete Holmes has a great podcast. That's just like long interviews and Fresh Air with Terry Gross. Mm-hmm. So I was really into all these long form interview podcasts. So all those elements combined to this moment where I was like, I'm going to take a road trip because I'm moving into my mom's house in Seattle.
Okay.
I'm going to take a long road trip across the country. I'm going to buy a bunch of audio equipment and figure out how that works. And I also could really use some inspiration. Why am I still writing? What does it mean? Mm. How do I keep going? How have other people dealt with this? I wanted to have these sort of like heart-to-heart conversations with friends. And I was like, why not? You know, I think my friends are just as interesting as comedians.
Right.
So why not have a podcast about us and what we're trying to do? So that's the story. I reached out to every person I'd ever had a good interaction with, many of them on Twitter. So this is part of the push-pull about social media.
Right.
Like made all this possible. But so I recorded over the course of 2 months and 6,600 miles traveled, I recorded like 45 interviews and just started the podcast that summer.
So you like go everywhere to interview people.
To date, every single interview I've done has been in person, sitting across the table from someone like this, which I think makes conversations
so much better.
Way better. So that's a huge focus for me. Now, I obviously don't road trip as much anymore, but when people come to town, I meet up with them. And then I still travel for book conferences, so I try to do
people
them
when you're on the
too.
Road.
Yeah.
We have to talk about this off air.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about this part. But okay, if people want to get like the quintessential first draft episode, like what's a good place to start? Because you have like 200 plus.
Yeah.
And they're none of them are time sensitive. Like
no,
it's not like you guys are talking about like current events.
It's true. It's true.
So if people wanted to start somewhere, where would you suggest?
That's such a great question. And I should have more of a ready answer because I get asked it fairly often.
I never have an answer for this question. I'm always like, I don't know.
Right.
They're it's all like, great.
I know.
I'm perfect. I'm in an amazing show. They're all great. Leave me alone.
I know. I'm like, well, and partly what colors this answer is that I love the old episodes, but the audio on them is tough.
Mm.
I find it difficult to recommend when now it's much better.
Right.
So that's a part of it. But so recent really fun big episodes include Sarah Dessen.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to her in the wintertime. That was a really great one. Older episodes that are really great are Libba Bray. She was a two-parter, but she was just like, she's someone that inspires me so much. And I really love talking to her. I love every episode with Maureen Gu, who is a personal friend of mine. She's so funny.
We can swear.
And Veronica Roth, you know, I love talking to her. Samaya Dude. I'm just naming.
Okay. They're all good.
They're
I started
good.
With Nick Stone and I really like that
one. Yeah,
that was fun.
Nick is so fun to talk to.
She's really like so energetic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some that I haven't gone to yet that I've like downloaded. I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
And I listened to the Martian guy.
Oh, Andy Weir.
That was live.
That was live.
That was cool.
That was a really interesting event. New York Comic Con asked me to come ask him questions. And I was so happy to because I loved that I got to talk to someone writing adult books.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved getting to talk to someone that was writing the hardest sci-fi possible because I usually don't read those kinds of books.
Yeah.
So it was fun to stretch that way. And to do a live show was cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And like as you mentioned, like this year, 2019, is a big thing for me to expand into. Like, I want to talk to other podcasters about how you structure story within this medium.
Right.
I want to talk to musicians. Rhett Miller, the lead singer of the Old 97s, is someone I got to talk to recently. He was such a good episode. Johnny Sun, who is a writer but also an illustrator. It was so fun to talk to him. John Klassen. Like, yeah. So I am really focused. And you spoke to Tani Newsome recently.
I did.
I love her. Yes. I want to talk about acting as
Tani is amazing. You have to, I connect you guys. Tani is like amazing. And she was like, she's one of the favorite episodes for sure. People always say that they loved Tani.
I loved how much she was talking about travel writing. I loved
it. She's so smart. Oh my God. I met her through teaching spin. Yay. She was one of my writers, I was at a podcasters for color event somewhere, and she walks in. I'm like, "You have a podcast?" She's like, "Yes," because her podcast is like a serious big deal. She's like, "I do," and she's like, "Do you have a podcast?" And I was like, "I also do, but I'm way embarrassed now that you've told me the name of your podcast." Like, so it was very funny to like connect totally outside, and now she's like my pal.
Yes.
Is the show what you thought it would be when you started it? Like, is this what you had envisioned for yourself, or has it grown out of control? Or
wow, yeah, that is such an interesting question. I had no idea what it was going to be. I really don't think I put too much on myself, but also that's I'm not the best forward thinker, I wouldn't say. I'm a little bit in the moment sometimes. So I guess it's been 5 years now, and the show is like still not making me any money. Right. So I'd like to work on that.
Yes, of
course. That's something me I'm too. Working on now. Yeah, right? That's like the forever thing with a DIY project of love kind of thing. But I think it's way bigger. I think it's way bigger than I would have thought. And also, I'm 5 years in and I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever could have foreseen that.
Yeah.
So I also am like, gosh, this medium I like so much. I think maybe I want to look at other ways to explore podcasts or storytelling through podcasts or stuff like that. So I don't think I expected it to be and it also saves my sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Like writing books is like, you know, years long.
Right.
It's all, you know, talking about script writing, any of that stuff that I want to do for a job is like really tough, but the podcast is a whole different part of my brain. It happens every week. I control every part of it. So that's been like a total lifesaver.
Right. That's awesome. Okay. We're going to shift gears a little bit. So we do this thing on the show called Ask the Stacks where people send in an email for a book recommendation.
Ooh.
I haven't told you about this at all. So surprise.
I'm ready.
And this one was really out of my wheelhouse. We'll see how you do. It's from Michelle P. And this is all Michelle said to us.
Okay.
I like thrillers, detective and crime dramas, especially anything that's a series. And then she gave us a few book series that she likes. So she likes Dean Koontz, the Jane Hawk series. She likes James Patterson, Women's Murder Club. She likes Kate White, Bailey Wagon series. I literally didn't know any of those things. I've heard of some of the authors. Michelle, I'm so sorry that you sent this to me because I just don't know. But these are like the three thrillers I know about. One is Tana French.
Yes.
She does like a whole series. I read In the Woods. I always want to call it Into the Woods, but that's a musical. It's different. It's In the Woods is what she wrote. And I read it and I think that I liked it because I remember it, but I read it years ago and I've never read any of the other books, but people love her. So Tana French. There's a new book that came out called The Chain by Adrienne McKinty. And I haven't read it yet. I have it. And I actually really want to read it. It's about like kidnapping families that like kidnap kids, and like to get your kid back, you have to like kidnap another kid or something. And apparently it's like thrillery, but also like pretty corny, like enjoyable thrillery. Ooh. So I'm kind of interested in that because I feel like I might think that was fun and not too scary.
That's interesting.
And then the other one, which I haven't read, but I've seen the movie, is Mystic River by Dennis Lehane. I've heard it's amazing. I've heard it's like fantastic writing. I don't think it's part of a series, but I know he's written a lot of other books. So those are my suggestions. They're not necessarily what you asked for, but they're not necessarily not what you asked for.
I think those are great. The first thing that came to mind was Tana French for me as well.
Yeah.
So I think I can definitely second that recommendation. And I like to think of a lot of lady writers in this category. I think there's actually been a ton of women writing smart, awesome, thrillery stuff lately.
Okay.
Obviously, Gillian Flynn comes to mind,
right.
I'm sure. That
I had that, and then I was like, is that too obvious?
Is that too obvious? but it stands. Michelle,
right.
If you haven't read it, you really should. I especially liked Gone Girl. I know other people like Sharp Objects better, but I really liked Gone Girl.
I liked Gone Girl.
Yeah. I'm like, maybe it makes you basic, but it's really good. Station 11?
Okay, I love that book. Did you think that was thrillery?
I haven't read it.
Oh, it's so good. It's not thrillery, though. It's like it's like literary apocalypse. It's amazing, though.
Okay.
She has a new book coming.
Ooh.
Emily St. John Mandel, I think is her name.
What a name. I love that.
Yeah.
What is that series that was called the something ladies detective agency that was made into a TV show.
I don't know, but I'll find it.
It sounds like it's in that wheelhouse. And I do know that my mom was obsessed with the TV show.
Okay. I'll try to find it and put it in the show notes.
I know there, and you know what? I'll just speak to some YA that she could check out if she wants there's an author named Kara Thomas who wrote a book called The Cheerleaders and forgive me, Kara, I'm missing the name of your other book, but Kara writes thrillers and they're smart and really good.
Okay.
The Cheerleaders is about that phenomenon that happened in upstate New York. You might have heard about this back in the day. It was like a case of mass hysteria where a bunch of cheerleaders went, they sort of had, what's that syndrome where you kind of can't control your speaking?
Tourette's?
Yeah.
Oh my
they
gosh.
Kind of fell ill with this, like, it basically, it's fascinating. So this group of cheerleaders just kind of lost their minds collectively. And her book is about that and murder and all that fun stuff.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yes. So that I can definitely recommend.
Okay. Those are our recommendations, Michelle. If you read anything, please let us know. And if you guys want your recommendations read on the air, go email us at askingthestacks@gmail.com.
I love that you do that. That's fun.
It's fun. Yeah. I just started doing it a little bit ago, but I think it's really fun. And I like to surprise the guests and see what they come up with. Okay. So now we're going to transition to the Stacks questionnaire and questions for you. So we always start with two books you love and one book you hate.
Man, this was these questions are always hard, right?
I know.
Favorite books. And I have to I brought my listener, I brought my little
papers.
Written up answers because I was so nervous about forgetting titles. And I will say, we are recording this during Leo season. So the first book I wrote was Tell Me Everything by Sarah Ennie.
Oh, amazing. You're like, a Leo?
Yeah. Well,
me too.
I'm not a Leo. Oh. Although like almost all of my friends are Leos.
There you go. So what are you?
I'm a Gemini.
Oh, interesting.
I know. Sagittarius.
Gemini, Leo, I feel like is not.
Not always.
Not always. Like, I wouldn't think that you would have lots of Leo friends.
But I'm a Taurus moon and a Sagittarius rising.
My husband is a Taurus. I love all Tauruses. So that must be it.
I hate that I love all Tauruses. I'm constantly falling in love with Tauruses.
Oh, they're so great.
They're not ideal for Gemini.
Got it.
But that's okay. Obviously, I love them. So anyway, I was like, I'll just say my book because I want to encourage people to remember that they love their own work. So
yeah,
I wanted to throw that out
good.
There. But besides my book, I have two titles that I think will give you a sense of like the range of books that I kind of really love. I said The Lord of the Rings by J.R.R. Tolkien and The History of Love by Nicole Krauss, which is, have you read that one?
I have not, but you're like maybe the fifth person to include that in one of your two books you love.
It was phenomenal. It's just, she's a poet and you can tell when you read it.
Yeah.
My writing style isn't that way. Mm-hmm. So whenever I see someone, and Catherine Valente is also this way, you read their books and you're like, it's just the structure, sentences that stop you in your tracks and you have to reread them in the moment. When you find a book like that, you really sink into it. And Nicole Krauss's first book, The History of Love, was assigned for me in college. And I just remember laying in bed and reading it and then going back to the first page and reading it again. And I never do that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I should have asked you this before. We're going to pause on the book you hate. Do you have any author that is on your dream interview list?
Oh, so many. I mean, Catherine Valente and Nicole Krauss would definitely be on that list. Tolkien would if he was alive.
Right.
I have a ton. John Ronson. My God, I would love to talk to him.
I've read Psychopath Test, but I want to read Publicly Shamed.
Oh yeah, you definitely should.
I want to do that on the show. I'm saving it for someone to pick it one day.
Ooh, you should also read Them.
Okay.
Adventures with Extremists is fascinating.
Oh my God, that sounds like me.
Yeah, and actually the Psychopath Test will come up later. Spoiler. Okay. Oh my gosh, other dream guests. N.K. Jemisin. Are you kidding? That would be a difficult interview because I'd have to keep my cool.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So that she comes to mind because I was lucky enough to moderate a panel that she was on at BookCon in May. And I really had to like be like, Sarah, get your professional game face on.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Book you hate.
I hated A Little Life.
Interesting.
By Hanya Nagagihara, and I apologize, I probably didn't say that very well, but I want to give her a shout out because she did write a beautiful book.
She wrote a beautiful book.
It's difficult for me to express how upset that book made me.
Go on. Try.
It was, first of all, I found it interesting and odd that this woman of color wrote about they're not all white, the four main characters, but they are extremely wealthy. Yes. If not at the outset, they become wealthy. And so that sort of gets like tossed aside. So, so class is sort of immediately dismissed as an issue. And it ended up, I guess I'll say, and I guess I don't want to spoil this book, but I don't know, it doesn't matter. But I didn't find the sexual trauma explored in that book. I was like, why?
Right.
It went so far.
Right.
And it was so graphic and extended. I mean, like, you know, honestly, for any reader that's looking into that book, like, you really should know before you start reading it, because it would be very upsetting if that reading that kind of stuff was upsetting to you, because it was really intense. And I, 3/4 through the book, I spoiled myself for it. I never do this. I went online and was like, I have to know what happens in this book, because
I have to
believe that this is worth it.
Right.
And when I read the ending, I set my laptop down and then picked up the book to throw it against a wall. I was
God.
I cannot believe that that's how this book freaking ends.
Wow. Okay. So I read the book. I read it in a week. I read it very quickly. Everyone told me it was really sad and I was going to cry. And I was like, I don't cry. This is not who I am. This is not my brand. I get – there's a part of the book that's called like the happy years. And I text my friend. I go, well, here's the thing. I know these years couldn't possibly be happy.
And he's like – because that's not this thing.
He's like, where are you? I'm like, I don't know. But the start of the happy years, I know it's a lie. I appreciate the writing. I really appreciate the writing. And I appreciate the storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like it's – like she wrote the shit out of this book.
Captivating. Oh, yeah.
Totally captivating.
And you
can't put it down.
Literally everyone that they couldn't put it down. Yeah. Whether you loved it or hate it, you read it in a week.
Yeah, I read it in a week. I was in Thailand with my best girlfriend. I kicked her out of our room so I could take a bath and cry, because, of course, I started crying towards the end.
Of course.
But my big gripe with the book is that it's touted as like this like gay novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gay. I'm heterosexual. I'm a woman. It's not really about me. But I do find it a little strange that the great American gay novel is about two men who neither of them admit to being gay.
Right.
Like, I think that's weird.
Right.
And I don't know that that's necessarily like fair to people who are proud and out. Like I think if the great American black novel was written about people who were passing as white, I would be like, wait, what the fuck? This is not the black experience necessarily. And like, of course, I'm not saying it's not an experience, but the idea that like this book is being touted as that is weird to me.
Yes.
It felt like a lot of pain for pain's sake.
That's you just summed it up really well. Pain for pain's sake is how I ended up feeling about what was expressed in that book. And I couldn't agree more. I really do. Like, I know Anthony on Queer Eye is like obsessed with the book and wears t-shirts and loves it so much. And I know that a lot of gay men really feel strongly about that book. And of course they should feel strongly about whatever they want. But I agree with you. I'm like, man, to me, all that says is we need more great gay books.
Right.
Because it was so riddled all the way through with such terrible, sad, awful, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, it was so difficult to read. And I didn't feel like – and this is something that I've discovered about myself as a reader. I wasn't able to say, I know why you're putting the reader through this, me as the reader through this. I need to get the sense that an author has a purpose and that I'm reading it. And like I'm like, oh, this is like what they're trying to express or what they're working through or what they're – you know. And with this book, I was like, I'm just not getting that. It seems like you just want me to feel – so sad.
Right.
And that's it.
And it worked.
It definitely was, I mean, it was emotionally wrecking.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad we got to talk about it.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I'm like, no hate on anyone that likes that book. It was recommended to me by a ton of friends, but I love talking about how much I hate it because it's a great conversation. It's
totally
starter.
A good one to hate. What's the last really great book you read?
Man, this is an interesting one because it made me think about what does it mean when I – like what does a great book mean to me? I feel like to me it's when you put a book down and you're like sort of stunned for a while after you finished it, you know? And the one that came to mind when I was looking back through my list of books was We Are Okay by Nina LaCour.
I don't know that.
It's a YA book and it's like a gothic – like a modern gothic kind of book. And it won the the Michael L. Prince Award, which is the highest honor for a YA book every year, that the ALA Awards, and rightfully so. It was like Stunningly beautiful. I really recommend it to people. It's very quiet. It's really like a meditation. It was just like made me feel all the things. And the other book that came to mind was H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald.
Okay.
This book is fascinating. It's a mix of, she's a scholar, a British scholar who was studying T.H. White. So it's a mix of talking about T.H. White's The Once and Future King, talking about T.H. White's actual life as a repressed in the closet gay man, and talking about her life, not only in having just lost her father suddenly, but in learning to hawk.
Whoa.
So it's a really weird book. There's a lot going on, but she is a masterful writer. And it was just, it was a mix of nonfiction and talking about fiction. And it was just, it wrapped me up and the writing was exquisite. And I knew, and now I know a lot about hawking, which is
and
really
now you're going to become a hawker.
Exactly.
That's what you call it. What are you reading right now?
Right now I am reading this massive fantasy novel by Samantha Shannon called The Priory of the Orange Tree.
Okay.
I've been reading it off and on for the entire year because it's so big. It's like you can't take it anywhere. But I'm super enjoying it. I'm not often into fantasy stories that have to do with dragons.
Okay.
But this is a dragon book that is like, I'm on board. I'm into it.
You're team dragon.
You're very
Daenerys in this case.
I'm very Daenerys.
I don't really know what that means. I don't even know Game of Thrones, but I know that she's the dragon queen or something.
You used it appropriately.
Okay, nailed it. Tell my brother. He's going to be so proud of me. Let's see. What are books that you're looking forward to reading?
Oh, this is such an interesting one. Oh, my gosh. And speaking of George R. R. Martin, I was like, Winds of Winter.
Is that the next one?
That's the one that he's been writing for like 10 years or something. And God knows if we'll ever see it. But if I have read all those books, so I would be very interested to see how he ended the story because I was not satisfied with how the TV show ended. Also, Veronica Roth, aforementioned Veronica Roth, is coming out with an adult novel called The Chosen Ones. Super excited for that. And literally anything that Catherine Valente writes for the rest of her life.
Okay. That's like your ace.
Yeah.
She's your one. What's a book that you really like to recommend to people?
Oh, this was such an interesting one. First of all, The Passage by Justin Cronin, I recommend a ton. It's he is an MFA. He's a professor of what am I trying to say? He teaches people to write.
Okay.
At Rice University. And so he has a really beautiful writing style. But The Passage is basically a zombie novel.
Okay.
So it's a really – and it's like 800 pages and it's just like so well written and juicy. And it really is another book that swept me away when I was having a hard time and I was so grateful for it. So I recommend it to a lot of people because it really moves and it's well written and is zombie book. So who doesn't love that?
Me?
Well, you might.
I don't know. I say that I don't like that. And then I feel like if it's good, I like it.
Yeah.
I like a good book.
I think if, especially like beach read, like you want to bring one book for like traveling or whatever, that's a good one, I think. And then I also, Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed.
We did that on here.
I mean.
So good. I love that book.
I've sent it to people who are having really awful times. I read it post-divorce on that road trip. And it was just like, you know, crying rivers. I mean, one of your questions is about recommending books for kids to read. I'm like, make sure everyone in high school reads that book, right? Mm-hmm. Just like a lesson in empathy.
Yeah. So good. Have you read Tell Me More by Kelly Corrigan?
No.
Okay. It's kind of in the similar vein. It's a little bit more about grief. And it's like the 10 things I'm learning to say. And like, of course, like some are like, yes and no, but some are like, tell me more, or like, I was wrong, and like that kind of stuff. But it's kind of, it's a little bit different, but I put them similarly and they both made me feel things and I wept. So if you want to weep, you said you lost your father.
I did.
So I did too. And I was in 2012 for me, and reading this book, I was like, because she loses her father like right away in the book. It's about, she's like a writer. She's like an Oprah person, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then she's writing this other book and then her father and like one of her best friends both pass away. So it kind of like changes. And so they are kind of part of the frame of this book, but the real frame is this Tell Me More thing. And anyways, it's really
good. That sounds like it's so 100%
good.
Up my alley.
It's so good. Okay, let's see. What's the last really good book that someone recommended to you?
Uprooted by Naomi Novik.
Have
you heard about this?
No.
I know you're not a big fantasy reader.
No,
but
I'm not.
This one is a one-off, and it's shorter than the typical like massive fantasy novel. So I would still recommend it.
Okay.
Also, it's fantasy, but it's kind of towing the line of like sort of fairy tale feel and also women's fiction or romance.
Okay.
Like it's like juicy, it's sexy, it was a book, it was another book where when I, my two friends who live in New York were visiting me and I was like, I can't hang out with you for the next hour because I have to read this book. I was like, I'm not going to get out of bed yet. I'll see you guys in an hour. I was like breaking appointments to read it. You know, it was so good. And that was recommended to me by a bunch of people. But I'm trying to think about, H is for Hawk was recommended to me by my friend Sandy London, Alex London. And also The Bear and the Nightingale. See, I'm a big fantasy reader, so a lot of these aren't as applicable to you.
No, that's okay. They're not for me. They're like, I feel like my listeners run the gamut, and sometimes I think they get annoyed with me because I'm like, read this intense book about incarceration. And then it's so nice to have someone come on and be like, read this YA fantasy book. Yeah. Like, do you want to have a beach? People are like, what should I read on the beach? I'm like, I don't know. Any book you read on the beach is a beach read. You're like, read this book about zombies. So it's like perfect. I'm so excited.
Oh, good.
Plus, I could use some lighter reads sometimes.
I know. It's good to mix it up.
It really is. I think it helps. You read a lot because you read for your show and you're a reader. Are there things you wish were different about your reading life?
Oh my gosh. I both wish that I read faster and that I read slower.
Okay.
I was talking to a friend of mine, Stephanie Perkins, recently. She's another writer, and she was talking about a class she took in college called, I think it was just like the art of reading or reading like a writer, I think it was. And she was talking about how all the stuff you had to do for that class of like reading what you're reading and then taking notes about the sentence structure, why they did that. It sounded like now she reads really slowly because she reads that way and she really absorbs and learns from the books that she's reading. And part of me is like, man, I wish I did that.
Right.
I think I'd probably be a better writer. But at the same time, I want to read everything.
Right.
So I wish some people really can read a book in a day. And I'm like, what a dream.
Yeah. It's got to be short.
Yeah. I also, when I'm reading, sometimes I'll go back and like on Goodreads, they'll have quotes, right, from the books. And I'll be like, that was in that book? Like, I don't remember.
Never remember things from books.
I remember the feeling I had and characters.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, that one line or something.
Yeah, I never remember the lines. How do you read so much? Like, what do you do to make time for reading?
Well, I don't sleep very much.
Okay.
So what?
Right. Helpful.
So the pattern that has appeared in the last 2 years, which I need to address, is typically if I'm on a real big reading binge, what it means is that when I go to sleep, I read this book for a couple hours. Then I wake up 3 to 4 hours later, meaning like 2 or 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I guess it's time to read. Like, gee, I can't go back to sleep. I guess it's time to read. And then I read until the sun comes up and then I go back to sleep and wake up. So this is like disordered sleeping. Like
Got
this
it.
Is not a good
But
pattern.
You do most of your reading like in the night, overnight.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, it's interesting because then people will be like, how do you do all this? And I'm like, well, I guess I do it when everyone's sleeping.
Mm.
But that does mean I'm not sleeping.
So you're not sleeping.
It messes me up. So
that's not great.
I got to figure it out.
I don't love that for you.
I agree.
I don't love that for you.
And then what ends up happening is I'm trying earnestly to read out in the world and my body's like, so we're sleeping now?
Yeah. It's bedtime. Gotta go. You're like base plant and your coffee.
Not great.
Are there books are there genres that you avoid? I've heard you say fantasy that you love. I've heard you say things that you really like. What about stuff that you're like not into?
Yeah, this is I liked considering this question because I am a really wide reader. Mm-hmm. I definitely read widely, and that's something that I like am invested in continuing to do.
Right.
But I guess I would say definitely when it comes to like hard sci-fi, you know, I don't care about math.
Right. You're not into the sciencey part.
Not the sciencey part.
You're more
much character-based, emotional. So I don't tend to get too drawn in by really hard sci-fi stuff.
Got it. Last book that made you laugh?
Oh, Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey
Sitting right
McKissick.
Behind you. I haven't read it yet. I just picked it up.
Okay. Talk about beach read and mixing it up with lighter stuff. Are you doing it for an episode or just whenever?
No.
Man, I really dug that book. It is goofy. And my friend Maureen Gu and I are very snobby about comedy.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Okay.
But we are. We consider ourselves to be very funny. and you had Tawny on. I've done a bunch of improv too. So not that makes me an expert, but this book made me laugh out loud.
Oh, I love that.
And genuinely. And that does not happen a ton with books. No. You know, it's hard for a book to make you laugh out loud, but that book cracked me up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What about last book that made you cry?
I'm an easy cry.
Okay.
So I will say that given that, there was two that really stood out to me. And one is Look Both Ways by Jason Reynolds.
Okay.
That book is coming out in October.
Okay.
And it's in middle grade. I think it's his first middle grade. It's like a series of vignettes. It just is like just heartbreaking. And he's such a good writer. And it was just little moments in these, you know, short stories are can be so evocative. Mm-hmm. And he really used that format to just like pull you in and make you feel all the things. And then How High the Moon by Karen Parsons. Okay. So interesting because these are both middle grade. And I'm not a big middle grade reader, but I read them for many reasons, but one of them being that they were on panels that I was doing at BEA. Uh-huh. And Karen Parsons, you may know her. She was an actress on Fresh Prince.
Okay.
But now she's like a reading advocate and has this book. And it is a historical middle grade fiction novel about a young girl in the Deep South when it's like the 20s, I think. So it's, you know, deeply segregated. And it was just like this beautiful family story that just kind of broke my heart and then mended it again. I loved it.
Who is she on Fresh Prince?
She's a cousin. Is Erica the I looked it up.
I'll put in the show notes.
Yeah.
Last book that made you angry.
Oh, I read Good and Mad by Rebecca Traister.
We did that on the show.
Yeah. So that was the but it did make me feel good.
Good and mad.
Yes.
Both things.
It did. At the end I felt better. But yeah, that was a real
totally.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot in there. What about favorite local bookstore or favorite indie bookstore? Does this have to be local?
Yeah.
You've lived everywhere.
Well, I was going to say, I feel bad because like we are in LA and LA has fantastic.
We have so many good ones.
We have a ton of really great ones. But the ones that came to mind for me first were actually ones that I enjoyed when I lived in DC.
Okay.
Politics and Prose.
Love. I was just in DC in May.
God. And you get to go?
I went to Politics and Prose.
Did you go to Kramer Books?
I did. I'd been there. I did not go that time.
Okay. Yeah. That was another one that, I mean, there's a bar in there, you know, I mean, Politics and Prose has one too, but Kramer Books and Afterwards is such a cool store. And it was in DC was an interesting time in my life. I wasn't really digging my day job. So getting to escape to a bookstore meant so much. And I really loved those. And then through my travels, I also really love Malaprops in Asheville, North Carolina. Book People in Austin is amazing. And Bookshop Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California is one of the best bookstores in the country. I'm obsessed with it. And the last one I will say is this used bookstore called Gold Beach Books in Gold Beach, Oregon.
Okay.
It is in the middle of nowhere. Okay. I found it randomly on this road trip I was doing. And now I make people go hundreds of miles out of the way so that we can go to that bookstore because for some reason it's magic. And I always find like cool coffee table books and weird stuff there. I'm obsessed with that store.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. You're an English major, so you've read all the books ever written.
Yes.
Any books that you're embarrassed that you still not read?
Oh my God. I was like, where do I even start? 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I haven't read that book.
I picked it up 9,000 times and I've gotten to page maybe 10, 9,000 times.
Right?
I can't get into
it. I don't know. I wish I could download it into my brain. I'm embarrassed I haven't read that. And more Dostoevsky, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I don't know.
What about a favorite book assigned to you in school?
Their Eyes Are Watching God.
Oh, right. You said that.
I loved it. It was another one where I finished it and then I was like, oh, I think I want to read that again. And I just picked it right back up. And that did not happen in high school. You know, who had time to be reading more than for?
I didn't even read in high school. I would like read parts, but I don't like this.
Really?
I mean, some of the books I read and I liked, but most of them I didn't. But I have gone back and reread books that I was supposed to read in high school.
And enjoyed them more?
Well, one of them I talk about a lot on the show was thought about it, the autobiography of Malcolm X for an African-American history class. I was like, I don't want to read this. This is huge. And like the beginning's kind of slow, especially if you're 17. And then I read it at like 22 and I was like, this is only the greatest book ever written. Like what? Someone assigned this to me in high school? Like, are you kidding? This book's amazing.
Yeah.
So that was one. I went back. I guess I can't remember if I went back and read The Great Gatsby or if I actually read it in high school, but I know that I've read it. I don't remember much. What would you assign if you were a high school teacher?
Okay. This was a interesting one because like we said, Cheryl Strayed, I just felt like I don't know if you feel like this. I felt very personally attacked by the advice columns in like Cosmopolitan magazine.
Yes.
Or like YM or whatever those magazines
were
all reading.
And I think they've changed.
I think they're different now.
But yes.
And I think we're around the same age. Yeah. I graduated high school in 03.
04.
Yeah. I was going to say, I also had Facebook way back. but that time frame was rough. And these and those almost like Dear Abby type of things for teenage girls were really like interventionist. It was like, you have to tell your girlfriend that her boyfriend is bad for her. Yeah. It was like so much latent misogyny and self-hate and self-loathing. So Cheryl Strayed, the fact that that was structured like an advice column and that it was so radically different was really healing to me. And that's what made me think about it in the context of high school. It's like, if you know, it's advice, give or take. But I feel like that is a good thing for young people to be exposed to. And then I also said The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, because YA is, you know, I'm so happy that YA exists now for kids that are in high school, because it's a great alternative to Holden Caulfield, who hasn't been relevant for maybe ever. So The Hate U Give is like not only for kids for whom that isn't their experience, it's important to read. And then for the kids who relate to it as their lived experience, even more important to see that book on the shelves, and that it's the number one New York Times bestseller for like 2 years. You know,
that's so crazy.
Such a huge, cool deal. And then the last one I'll say is Bad with Money by Gabby Dunn.
Oh, yeah.
Just as a practical.
She's another podcaster.
Yeah.
Actually, she knows Tawny. I met her at Tawny's New Year's party this year. New Year's Day. It's very casual. It's not cool. It's not like late night, like partying. No, it's like, anyways.
You know how us podcasters party. We really get
really
down.
Big, these big, you know, 11 to 2 in the afternoon parties. I've got to go back to reading. Anyways, let's see. Last one. If you could require the current president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
This was a very satisfying question to consider. I was like, oh man, where do you even begin?
I can't take credit. It's from the New York Times by the book, but they've been doing it from before Trump. So
back when presidents used to read.
Yes. Obama's list just came out of his books that he read this summer, and I was like, Miss Presidents Read.
I know. I like, and honestly, I remember seeing that and being like, I love that he was like, well, you know, this guy's not going to do it, so I guess it's on me to continue making
a reading list. Here, it's a reading list for America. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm like, thank you.
He's like, Oprah's off the air. This guy can't read. Fine. It's my one service to the country that I'll continue to do.
Exactly. So one thing that came to mind from like a civic-minded standpoint was These Truths by Jill Lepore.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, the first female written history of the United States, like that would be great for us all to read, but especially this guy who doesn't seem to be that familiar with the United States. But then I was like, well, I loved this question because I was like, this is a hypothetical in which he has to read the entire thing. Ooh, like what a deeply satisfying thing. So These Truths from a civic minded standpoint, but then Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, I was like, of course he has to internalize the art. And then I thought also of The House on Mango Street by Sandra Cisneros.
Yeah.
I was like, if I could force him to take in any kind of cultural, a thing of meaning, it would have to be by Black and Brown people so that he could be like familiar with them as human beings.
Right, that like they exist.
However, that leads me to my last point, which is the fact is that he is not able to see other people, race regardless.
Right.
He is not capable of empathizing or conceptualizing other human beings.
Correct.
That's my belief anyway, armchair psychiatry. But so I said the psychopath test.
Oh, perfect.
By John Ronson, because maybe he'll find something to relate to.
Maybe he'll relate to himself. Yeah. Those are so good. I do love that question because I feel like there's always so many different answers. And there are certain books or authors that come up, like Ta-Nehisi Coates has come up a lot. Toni Morrison obviously has come up a lot there. But then there's also books that people come like the Jill Lepore has never been said, the John Ronson's never been said. So I think it's kind of fun. It's just a fun question to also see where my guests are think about him.
Yeah.
And this is one of the few questions that I don't have a good answer for myself. I still haven't figured out what I would want him to read.
Really?
I don't know.
Does it change all the time?
Sometimes, I read something and I'm like, oh, you should read that. Mm-hmm. Like there's a book coming out in October by Saeed Jones called How We Fight for Our Lives. And it's an amazing book. I think you should read that. And then I also love Lacey Johnson, who wrote The Reckonings. I think you should read that too. They're essays. They're smart though. It's so smart. I don't know.
Oh, like, you should read Roxane Gay.
Right. I mean, like there's like a never ending list. I think that's why I never have an answer. Cause I'm like, there's a million things.
Yeah. The truthfully, the answer is he should read.
Yes. Anything.
Maybe
some people go children's books. That's sometimes the direction people go.
How about this? I'd like for him to read his national security reports.
Yeah. I'd like him to read his briefing.
Yeah.
Would be fine. That would be a great place to start. I don't know. Or all the postcards that I'm sure he gets sent about how terrible he is. Lord. I don't know. Well, not to end on the most negative dancing note, but we won't. We're going to add on a more positive note. Next week, we're going to be talking about Educated by Tara Westover.
So excited.
It's like, you know, the New York Times bestseller ever. This is like the most bestseller book we've ever done on the show.
Really?
So I'm assuming most of you have read it. If you haven't read it, you have a week. We will spoil it. So if you're, there's not a ton of spoilers, but there are. So like, if you don't know her story, read it, come back and listen.
Can I also recommend for your listeners, the audiobook was excellent.
I was told that the audiobook was excellent also. Yeah. I read it physically. I've heard great things about the audiobook. Audible is a sponsor here. audibletrial.com/thestacks for your free audiobook download. Get educated. Come back and listen. Boom.
Yes.
Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, what a joy. This is such a great conversation.
This was
thank
so
you so
fun.
Much.
Oh, and don't forget to get Sarah's book, Tell Me Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Duh. It's out in the world. We'll link to that and everything else we talked about today in the show notes. Sarah, thank you so much. And thank you guys so much. And we will see you in the stacks. That's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you to Sarah Ennie for being our guest. Make sure you get a copy of her book, Tell Me Everything, wherever you get your books. We'll be back next week to discuss Educated by Tara Westover. And yes, there will be spoilers. Find everything we discussed on today's show in the link in the show notes. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out the website, thestackspodcast.com. To join the Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Thanks to Audible, listeners of this podcast get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download just by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I will see you in the stacks.